Hello, ladies. It's time again for Aunt Penny's True to Life stories. And here in Aunt Penny's sunlit kitchen, she's just baked off a batch of brownies.
That's what they are, Dan.
Certainly look delicious, Aunt Penny.
You can help yourself to all you want because they're so digestible. See, they're made with chicken fat.
What Aunt Penny says is true, ladies. Anything safe in chicken fat is safe in your stomach. Certainly delicious.
Sits in your stomach like a commemorative half-dollar piece.
Well, Aunt Penny, we're all wondering what the story is going to be about today, and I'm going to sit back in your old rocker here and just listen to you tell the story.
It's the story of Miss and Mrs. Calvin Frawley.
Mr. and Mrs. Calvin Frawley, where do they live, Aunt Penny?
They made their home in a small southern town, not far from Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, that's nice country down that way. And what did Mr. and Mrs. Frawley do for excitement in that small southern town?
Well, they decided one summer to take a motor trip to the north, see what it looked like up around Michigan and the Great Lake area. Well, they set out in their late model automobile, and Mrs. Frawley turned to Mrs. Frawley.
Miss Frawley, what time is it?
It's almost 11 o'clock, Mr. Frawley.
Well, it won't be long now before we should be stopping for lunch.
Up ahead, doesn't somebody seem to be waving something there?
Yeah, looks like they're trying to flag us down for some reason.
Better stop, then, don't you think?
Better pull the car over to the side of the road.
All right, mister.
Missus, will you open the window there?
Hey, we're tiring the road.
You what, sir?
We're tiring the road.
Sir?
You can't go up this road, because after we put the tire on, we gotta put gravel and stuff that'll fly.
Hey, missus. Fella says they're tiring the road out here. Can't go any further.
Ask him what other road we can take.
What other road can we take, missus wants to know.
Well, I ain't a filling station, pal. I don't know what road. Where you going?
Well, we want to go up around the Great Lake, see some of the country.
Great Lakes, well, you're about 1,100 miles. I imagine any road north would do it.
We must have taken a left where we should have taken a right, missus.
What?
I say, back about 1,100 miles, we must have taken a right.
Ask him, can we turn around and go back?
Can we turn around and go back?
No, there's five trucks in back of you, and there's one coming the other way. You're going to meet here in about 2 minutes.
Well, I suppose we got to just stay here, then.
Well, you can't stay here unless you want to be covered with tar.
Well, we don't want to be covered with tar, do we, missus?
No, well, can we drive off through that field?
Can we drive off through that field, missus wants to know?
Sure you can.
Sir?
It's a bog.
Says it's a bog.
Ask him what a bog is.
What's a bog, Mrs. Watson?
Well, they kept talking to this gentleman there who was going to tie the rope. But I'm so afraid that we won't have time to finish that story.
Oh, goodness gracious, Aunt Penny. You always have to leave these stories up in the air because they're just at the exciting point.
Two tire trucks coming in opposite directions, soon to meet where Mr. and Mrs. Calvin Frawley were located.
Aunt Penny will continue her story of Mrs. and Mrs. Calvin Frawley next time, and I'm going to have a couple more of these delicious chicken fat brownies, Aunt
Penny. Take some home to the little ones. Help yourself because they are digestible, made with chicken fat.
Here now is a gentleman we'd like to introduce, whose work you may have seen in the bookstores, a writer of popular children's stories, Mr. August T. May.
Hello, Bob. It is a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you, Mr. May, and I wonder, just to refresh some of our memories, you could tell us a few of the books that you have written and which have had quite some success.
Well, maybe you remember the book I wrote for children. It was a children's book.
Yes.
The book's title was The Sky Fell Down.
I remember that one. My kids
really enjoyed
it.
It was a story for children. See, Bob, look. I'm wearing a blue suit.
I noticed that.
This is a new blue suit.
Very stylish with narrow lapels.
Do I look nice in a blue suit?
Yes, you do, Mr.
May.
Oh,
there is my dog Spot.
Now, Mr. May, I understand that as a writer of... will you take Spot out right at the moment?
Please, take the dog out. His name is Spot. Thank you for being kind to my dog.
He is
his
a funny
name
dog.
Is Spot. I love to run and play with Spot in my new blue suit.
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. May, what we really wanted to talk about was the job you did during the campaign, the recent campaigns, in the line of helping out a senator that you were working for.
A representative I was working for.
Uh-huh.
And I was hired to go on children's programs.
Well, he can
on
see...
radio and on television.
Right.
Do you know the difference between radio and television?
I think we all do.
Yes, we know the answer.
Well, if we may move along, Mr. May, this representative conceived the idea of getting at the parents via the children and their programs. And so he hired you to write speeches and to go on the kids' shows. And I understand you're going to give us a sample of what you did.
Yes.
Are you? Here then is children's book author August T. May and his political speech.
Hello to all my young friends. It is August T. May. I'm happy to be here to talk to you again. I have talked to you many times in my books. Do you remember my children's books? One called The Little Weeping Willow Tree That Cried. I bet you do. Now, I'm going to talk to you on the radio. I would like to talk to you about a nice man. His name is Jack Spratt. He's a very nice man. This nice man would like to go to Washington, our nation's capital, to live for 4 whole years. Now, when he gets there, and when he lives there, he will make very nice laws for your mommy and daddy. He will make wonderful laws that will lower those big, bad taxes and give money to your mommy and daddy so that they can buy you toys and candy and ice cream. Run now out to the kitchen and tell mommy to be sure and vote for Jack Spratt. He's a very nice man.
I think we get the idea.
Oh, there is Gina Lola Bridger there.
All right.
I must run and play with
Mr.
Gina.
Augustine, a very sneaky way. And how did Mr. Spratt make out? Can you tell us at this time?
Both he and I were arrested.
I see.
It's on an appeal now.
Thank you, sir.
First radio cast in this area of Repulsive Pictures' 1934 box office bomb, Test Dive, which starred several British actors.
Well, Eddie, what are you doing?
Oh, I thought I'd just get a cup of coffee.
There's a little...
Hey, I was just looking over your physical. I don't know whether you're going to qualify for that dive.
Oh, don't tell me that, Harry.
No, well, it's not that you're not okay, it's that you've done so many of them. And...
Well, look, there's only one more to be done. That one tomorrow morning. And then I'm putting the down payment on that little white cottage with a fence around it.
Madeline was telling me about that.
She's a great gal, Harry.
I know she is.
It's only for her that I'm quitting the air game.
Have you thought about what you'll be doing after the dive tomorrow, Eddie?
No, just gonna take it easy. Grow carrots, beets, that little garden out back. Play with the kids.
I'm awful glad that you've saved your money the way you have. I know that you've always gotten so much enjoyment out of that garden and that home.
Yeah, will you hold this cup for me? After that one test dive tomorrow will be the end of a terrific career, and then I'll be starting out on a real pleasant retirement.
The chief doesn't know whether you should do it or whether I should do it tomorrow.
Oh, I don't want you to do it, Harry. Look, this is just routine.
I know it's routine, but you're...
Well, I gotta go now. Just get the feel of the ship.
Want to go with you, Ed?
No, I'll be okay.
You want to do it alone, huh?
See you tomorrow, and thumbs up.
Right.
Control tower to Eddie. You're at about 17,000. You have the instructions, Eddie. You're going to write down, of course, all your reactions. Put her into a dive about 16. Pull her out about 8.
Right, Chief.
Everything okay up there, Eddie?
Everything's fine.
Good enough. Thumbs up.
I'm at 16 now, Chief.
Right.
Ready for the dive.
Okay. Hey, you know what?
What?
You're not too far from that little house with the garden out back.
Oh, I don't think I'm not thinking about it, Chief. Well, thumbs up anyway.
Right on, Eddie.
Here I go. I'm not pulling up now, Chief. I gotta prove this ship has got what it takes.
Come on, Eddie. This is an order.
Thumbs up, Chief.
This is an order.
Where did he pull out of that dive? What's he crazy?
Come on, pull him out.
Remember that little white house, Eddie.
Eddie, pull him out.
With a picket fence.
Pull him out, Eddie.
I'm not pulling it out, Chief.
We'll be back for the climax of Test Dive in just a few moments. First, this reminder that our next broadcast will feature the soundtrack of the 1935 movie, If Pain Persists. Now, back to Test Dive.
Well,
What a beautiful ship. She flies like a charm.
Oh, you wonderful, happy-go-lucky pioneer of the aircraft industry. Now another episode of One Fella's Family, brought to you as a public service by the Be Kind to One Another Committee. Today's episode, entitled A Message Arrives, is taken from Book IV, Chapter VI, pages IV through VI. As we look in on the family, we see Father inside the foyer.
I am standing just inside the foyer.
I know. What are you doing out there?
Well, I was looking for my rosebush trimmers.
Well, they wouldn't be in the foyer. Probably you left them out in the garage.
Well, I can't remember where I put them last fall when I finished trimming the roses. They should be around here somewhere. Not too early to trim the rose bushes.
Why don't you leave the rose bushes alone? Can't you think of anything else to do?
The only way we'll get full bloomers, Sandy, is to trim them early and often.
I know, but you trimmed them practically down to the nub last fall.
Wait. Someone's coming up the front walk. Looks like a messenger boy of some sort. He'll be ringing the bell any moment now.
Why don't you open?
Yes?
You do, old man, here.
I am Father Butcher.
I've got a message for you.
All right. Do I have to sign for it?
Would you please hear right where I've made the penciled X?
T-H-E-R. B-U-T-C-H-E-R.
Have you, forgotten anything?
You need a tip?
That's what I mean, yeah, tip.
No, I didn't forget it. It's a message, Fanny.
I wonder who it could be from.
Looks like it's in Jack's handwriting.
Well, open it up. I get so nervous when those special delivery letters arrive.
That's what it is. It's a message from Jack.
What does he say?
I haven't read it yet, Fanny. That's peculiar. Both sides of the paper are blank.
Sure you haven't forgotten anything? Anything, forgotten anything.
You mean the tip?
Tip, yeah.
No. Didn't forget it. Yes, it is from Jack.
You never do give tips, do you?
Listen to this, Fanny. Jack's in San Francisco.
Oh, isn't that wonderful news? Jack is in San Francisco.
Fanny, Fanny, Fanny.
So concludes another episode of One Fella's Family, brought to you by the Be Kind to One Another Committee. Today's episode, entitled A Message Arrives, was taken from Book IV, Chapter VI, pages IV through VI. One Fella's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messy. Why don't you read your lines a little better, you old gaffer?
Well, our veterinary staff has been busy on fall features for the past week, and one of those which you have requested most is the Wedley Webster Book Review, which, of course, has been quite popular in the past. And, Webb, I'm looking forward to a fall and winter of great books brought to life in vivid description by you on these weekly visits.
You put it real pretty, Bob. Well, as you know, in the fall season, most of the publishers go to work. They get out a lot of books in the fall because people are back inside the house and they live.
Wedley suggests that people in the fall are ready to settle down and read a good book now.
Oh, Bob, you don't have to translate for me. People know what I'm saying.
That maybe is a little difficult for some.
That gets my goat. I don't know if I've ever told you that or not.
I won't.
But every time I say something, you say, "What Wedley means to say, ladies and gentlemen."
Well, all right,
they know what I'm saying.
Taking you all the time now. Let's get, what book have you got to review for this week?
The Fanny Farmer Cookbook.
This then would have to do with food, and what recipe do you like best about?
Well, there's so many wonderful recipes. I think on page 20, though, is the most interesting part of the whole book. This ship is at sea for about 4 or 5 days. And as we look in on them...
Ship at sea for in the Fanny Farmer Cookbook?
That's right.
You sure you have the right book? You're reviewing the right one?
Look, you mind your business and I'll mind mine.
But I see the Wedley Webster players over there. What are they?
They're here to dramatize the what I think is the most interesting part of the book.
Sort of to dramatize a cookbook, huh?
Well,
I don't know
what I'm going to do.
All right.
Page 48, then. It's shortly after 4 bells, and the ship's at sea for about 8 days. And we look in and...
You sent for me, Captain?
That's right, matey. Take a look at this here chart.
wants.
Yeah.
Where? The chart upside down. Why? You'll keep a civil tongue in your head when you talk to the good captain of this tub.
Begging your pardon, Captain. I just took a quick glance at the chart there.
I want you to take a good look at this chart, matey. Tell the captain where we are.
Well, if it were me, sir, I'd say we're about 200 miles south of Hatteras, sir.
What do you mean, if it be you? What kind of lingo is that to say to the good captain?
Will you ask me,
why,
sir? Well,
you... Get up off the deck, matey. Try to keep a civil tongue in your head. Now then...
Begging your pardon, sir.
What be we have to eat?
Well, we got some corned beef below, sir. A bit of blood pudding. Yeah. And some pilot crackers.
Why, you... That's no bill of fare to recite to the cap'n, mate. Now get ye out of here.
All right, sir.
So, that's pretty exciting, isn't it?
That's exciting, yeah, but
that's a Fanny Farmer cookbook. Get it at any bookstore, I guess.
And hello again, ladies. Once again, we're sitting in Aunt Penny's True to Life sunlit kitchen, all set for another of her famous stories. And Aunt Penny, is there any of that mince pie left?
Yes, there is, Danny. I noticed you liked it.
Oh, it sure was delicious.
Well, anything done in chicken fat, you know it's saturated with fat.
Yeah, it looks delicious.
Yes.
Anything that's cooked with chicken fat certainly is digestible. Doesn't sit in your stomach like a half-dollar piece.
What Aunt Penny says is true, ladies. You be sure and do all of your cooking, baking, deep-frying with chicken fat.
One thing about it, you can eat all you want, Danny. Here, help yourself to some of that
pie. I'm going to have a piece of this while you tell us today's true-to-life story, Aunt Penny.
Story of Miss and Mrs. Carlton Hobbs.
Yes?
And they had a small farm in New England. And they were farmers from way back. In other words, their father's fathers were farmers.
They came from farming stock.
Yes. And as we look in on them, this is a very interesting story, Danny, and I don't know as we'll be able to finish it all today with the limited time we have.
Let's begin it anyway, Aunt Penny. I know the ladies are anxious to hear it.
It's an early Tuesday morning as Mr. and Mrs. Carlton Hobbs are sitting in the kitchen. Now, Mr. Hobbs, I might point out, has a very interesting hobby. He likes to tinker.
You mean he's a do-it-yourselfer, Aunt Penny?
That is right, and he helps all his neighbors. Well, as we look in on him now, we find that one of the neighbors is about to knock at the back door.
Now, Miss Hobbs, seems to me like it's been a long time since one of the neighbors has knocked at the back door and asked me to help him out doing something.
There's hardly anything left for you to fix, it seems
like. Well, that's right. I've fixed just about everything here in Centerville.
Yes, I know. But you're such a wonderful neighbor, Mr. Hobbs.
Well, I try to stick my nose in as many people's business as I can.
But you do a wonderful job, and I've heard everyone in town.
I think somebody's at the door now, Miss Hobbs.
Yes, I believe you're right. Yeah. Well, I'll go open the door.
Oh, hello there.
Is the old man in?
Yes, he is.
Can I talk with him for a minute?
Well, yes.
Who is it, Miss Hobbs? Someone wants to see me? Want me to fix up something for him?
I don't know. Somebody wants to talk to you.
Well, bring him on in.
Well, I hate to come in here with my muddy shoes like this.
Ain't you Lawyer Clayton?
How do you do, yes.
Yeah.
Look, Mr. Hobbs, I hate to come in on you this way,
but... It's all right. Any friend of mine's a friend of mine in Centerville.
Well, look, something went wrong...
Centerdale, whatever the town is.
Bill, it's Centerville.
Centerville.
Hey, look, something went bad down at my house, sir.
Well...
I hate to traipse around this way with these boots. I hope you'll excuse me.
You know what I'm here for.
Oh, that's all right. He can clean it up.
I'm supposed to help my neighbors.
Well, that's fine. What's that?
I say, what I'm here for is to help my neighbors.
I wonder, could you climb in my carryall with me and go back to the house?
Sure, be glad to.
The pipes have all let go. There's water all over the cellar.
Well, I get my tool, kid. I'll be right with you.
Fine.
Hold down the fort, Miss Hobbs.
Well...
I may be gone all night.
He was gone all night. Will you dry up, actor?
Yeah.
He was gone all night. And he was gone for an entire month.
Well, goodness gracious, Aunt. An entire month.
Call the police, and it was quite an interesting
he
story.
He bit off more than he could chew, Aunt Penny.
He surely did, and I hope you can.
Speaking of that, I'm going to have another bite of this mince pie.
Well, we'll finish that story next time. Meanwhile, ladies, do all your cooking with chicken fat. It's digestible.
And now, Fink Bicycle Clips. Fink, P-H-I-N-Q-U-E. The bicycle clips made to keep your trousers from being caught in the bicycle chain as you pedal brings you another episode of Matt Neffer, Boy's Spot Welder.
Today we join Matt Neffer and his friend Todd after a busy day at the foundry in Matt's expensively appointed apartment. We hear...
Over here, Matt, in the foyer.
Well, just a minute. You call me Matt,
I'm sorry, Todd. I'm all confused. I don't know whether I'm coming or coming. I'm so thoroughly mixed up.
You've had so much on your mind lately, Matt, that...
Coming or...
Going.
Going, Todd.
You've just been able to get to work on time and haven't been able to think about anything.
Over here, back at the duck press.
I know you've been worried about this whole thing, Matt, but you know that every cloud has a silver... behind every cloud, there's a silver...
Spoon.
No. Over here by the bookcase.
Lining.
Right. Every cloud has a silver lining, Matt. And if you look on the bright side of things, I'm sure you'll discover that into each life a little...
Out here in the kitchen, looks like rain, Todd.
A little rain must fall, yes.
Clouding up there, I noticed in the south. That drain, I suppose I should call the superintendent. Of course, I've been carrying on my...
Experiments,
my
Matt?
My experiments here in the kitchen, Todd, and probably has clogged up the drain somewhat.
Well, at least you've had the foresight to get the experiments out of the way before the big work at the foundry.
Well, that drain off.
You know, of course, that a stitch in time saves...
Say, Todd, do you have Bertha's address?
Nine Sparrow Road. Nine. Stitch in time saves nine, Matt. I was trying to think of.
Todd, I don't know how to break this to you, but I think it's time that you be told.
You mean you're going to tell me what's been on your mind all these weeks? What's been preying on your conscience, perhaps, or keeping you from getting your mind on your...
I haven't had a night's sleep just thinking...
Wait a minute. Getting your mind on
it.
Getting your mind on your... Work. Getting your mind on your work.
Work, but it's...
You have a memory as long as a...
Well, Matt certainly is in a state of upset. But over what? And will he be able to tell his friend Todd what it is? Be sure and join us next time when we'll hear Matt say,
"I'm sick."
In the next episode of Matt Neffer, Boy Spot Welding King of the World.
And now, chocolate cookies with white... They've canceled? Oh. As a sustaining feature, here now, another episode of Lauren Spechtenberger, Interstellar Officer Candidate.
In our last episode, Lawrence and Mug had just received their diplomas and were about to be given their first assignments. Now, in the dormitory, as we hear...
Well, what do you think, Mug? Here we are, lieutenants now.
Yeah, I feel pretty proud of these bars, Spechtenberger.
Well, I guess I'm pleased that you finally earned them. I had some misgivings at first, but I've noticed you haven't sneered in at least 2 weeks now.
Funny, we were the only two to graduate, Spechtenberger.
Well, the others didn't apply themselves, and unfortunately, Jed Ordway, too, is washed out.
Well, shall we open up our sealed orders for our first assignment? It's kind of an auspicious occasion.
I wonder if you and I will draw the same assignment.
I wonder if we'll draw the same assignment, Fechtenberger, or whether we'll have different ones. We'll know in just a minute.
What the deuce? Look at here. I'm assigned to Bedford, Massachusetts.
And me to Walpole. How do you figure that?
I thought we'd be out in some planet.
Yeah.
Looks like a land job to me.
Yeah, we've been grounded, Fechtenberger. Maybe we better go see the dean. Maybe there's been some mistake.
Let's see if the commandant has any information.
Down these stairs, Fechtenberger. Through this door.
Through this door, Fechtenberger.
Oh, yes.
Now this next flight of stairs.
Has the commandant moved his office?
No, it's just that our dormitory is so high, that's all.
I wonder if this is the door.
I think there's another. This is the right door, yeah. Well, wait, we went by it. Let's go back up through that door there.
Oh, yeah, it's this one here.
Just up this small flight of stairs.
And through this door here.
And I believe it's up to that landing there, isn't it, Fechtenberger?
I'm getting pooped.
Couldn't we have telephoned the commandant?
There's the door here.
Better wrap before we go in.
It's not his office, just a huge auditorium. Clear across this auditorium, I think. Let's run across.
Right. Hey, come down, Fechtenberger. What are you going up there for?
I thought his office was up here.
No, it's over here. Come on back down. Now, should be behind this door that says commandant.
Yes?
Is the commandant in?
What would he be here for?
Well, it said commandant on the door.
No, this is just where we stoked the fires. You're in the wrong. The commandant's way across.
Across and up?
Across and up in the other building.
Okay, thanks very much.
Sorry. Let's go.
Do you think we ought to stop for lunch, Fechtenberger?
I'm pooped, Mellish. Let's sit down.
And so Lawrence and Mugg are in a quandary as to what their first assignment means. One, to Bedford, Massachusetts, and the other, at Walpole. Be sure and join us next time when we'll hear Lawrence Fechtenberger say...
You heard right, Mellish, and it's all your fault, too. We've been grounded.
In the next episode of Lawrence Fechtenberger, Interstellar Officer Candidate.
And now, another episode of One Fellow's Family, brought to you by the Be Kind to One Another Committee. Today's episode is entitled Great Excitement and is taken from book XXI, chapter IV, page 12 through 16. It's shortly after 9 a.m. now, and we find Father standing in the back entryway.
Beautiful day, Sandy.
Talking to...
Sky is blue overhead.
Mrs. is busy in the kitchen.
White, fleecy, cumulus clouds.
She will answer.
Float.
Carrying on.
All right, announcer, we're into the dramatic portion.
What were you saying? I couldn't hear you with the announcer.
Yes, Sandy, it's commenting on the weather.
Blue sky, my word, it's beautiful out.
Yes, it's a warm day for this time of year, too, even on the Pacific coast.
Yes, it certainly is.
Yes, not a sign of fog anywhere.
No.
In fact, the gulls are flying over the inlet.
The what is?
The gulls are flying over the inlet.
That's unusual.
Almost warm enough for a picnic, Sandy.
Oh, this would be no time for a picnic. I think you're getting a little soft in your dotage.
Do you remember the letter we got from Jack last week?
Picnic. What?
I say, do you remember the message from Jack saying he was returning to San Francisco?
I do vaguely remember something about that. I didn't remember too much about it.
Should have been able to get here from San Francisco at this time.
I'm becoming very odd myself.
Yeah, we should be hearing something from him soon.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a car coming up the drive now?
I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, must be by imagination. I could have sworn I heard a vehicle.
Well, I didn't hear anything. Let's not have an argument over it. Just because I don't hear a car come doesn't mean a car doesn't come.
Well, at any rate, we should be having some early morning excitement soon.
Yes. Real excitement.
You've been listening to another episode.
I don't know what the great excitement's going to be, Fandy.
Look, buddy.
But we'll discover soon.
Buddy?
Eh?
That part's all over.
Well,
now
you talk to our dramatic portion, we can talk to your announcement.
I don't know. I don't know how old you are.
You whippersnapper.
One of these days, I'm going to knock you right through the control room window.
I've
taken all the nonsense from you, fella, that I planned to.
Read the commercial.
For the free booklet, How to Be Kind, send your request to Be Kind to One Another Committee.
Kind indeed.
Care of Lefty Flanagan, Box 1135, Guam Island.
Well, box his ears.
Enclosed $1,100 in stamps, please. Now, listen. If you interrupt me once more, not only you,
I'll go right to Betsy.
It's now to Dover, Foxcroft, Maine, and Radio's Wally Ballou, who has another industrial report. So come in, please, Wally Ballou.
Dover, Foxcroft, Maine, where we're visiting at the Ace Bullfighter Cape Manufacturing Company, and we're speaking right now with the owner of this establishment.
How do you do? I'm Matthew Ted Weldon.
Ted, if we may call you that, how long have you operated this factory that makes capes for bullfighters?
Well, I started it on a shoestring, more or less. Right after I separated honorably, I might point out, from the service, with a GI Bill, I opened up a bullfight cape manufacturing plant.
Seems a little bit off the beaten track to be manufacturing these here in Dover, Foxcroft, but I guess you ship them all to Mexico and that sort of place.
Mexico and Spain, they use a lot of them.
I understand you've just opened up a new outlet in Providence, Rhode Island.
That's right. Well, that's where we put the trimming on. Up here we make just the cape. Down there they put the fancy work on it. I have 60 men employed here, and I have just 12 ladies putting the fancy stuff on them down in Providence.
Well, how did you happen to decide that this was to be your life's work, what you wanted to go in for?
Well, I don't know. It just hit me one day what to do. I had a whole life ahead of me. And I started to write down a list of papers what I'd like to be. Doctor, lawyer, cape maker, shoemaker, automobile manufacturer, owner of several banks. And I checked over and talked it over with my family, and we decided I'd be a cape maker.
Well, you certainly have a bright array of them here. They're all sorts and types. Do you make them different sizes for different size bullfighters?
Yes, that's right. You take a 6'2" bullfighter.
Can we take one of these down and hold it up for the radio audience?
Certainly, there it is. Now, you'll notice this is made from extruded rayon. We put the wet, gooey rayon through a process. Here, you hold it. What are you doing there?
Well, you said to hold it, and I just came away in my hands there.
Well, that's a $65 job you just tore there. With fancy work, it'd be $85.
Certainly didn't mean to ruin a finished piece of merchandise like this.
This here, if you'd be careful from now on,
right, Ballum.
Over here, this one is made from just plain extruded sackcloth. And
that's probably for the fellow who's just starting out bullfighting.
That's right, a fellow who doesn't want to spend too much money until he knows whether he can fool them their bulls.
Uh-huh.
And there's no sense in going out there and having an expensive cape torn to ribbons by an angry bull. The fellow who'll buy the expensive ones is the fellow who knows his way around a bull ring.
I guess you're right there, and
Nick, I'm right there.
Nice talking to you, Ted, and all good luck in the future with your business.
Well, if you want to talk to the ladies down in Providence, you can take your equipment down there.
Thanks again.
Ray, did you notice that familiar figure outside there trying to get in?
Where have I seen him before?
You know who it is. It's Captain Parker Gibbs, the fish for Thanksgiving man.
Oh, he must be out of work by now.
Come on in through the swinging door there,
Captain
Gibbs. Captain Gibbs had an idea that he's going to try to get the public educated to serving fish for Thanksgiving.
How are you, Captain? Pretty good. You can skip all that now.
Well, I thought so.
He
was such a flop.
That was a true flop, as you say. I've forgotten that. I've been hired by another group. And...
Oh, you've left the fish industry, have you?
That's right. Of course, the fish hasn't left me entirely, has it?
Wind of that.
Who
are you connected with now?
I'm with the Pizza Institute of America, Bob.
I see.
And we're out now to try to educate the public, to bring them around to serving pizza for Christmas rather than the traditional turkey.
Well, Captain Gibbs,
Well, you know.
I
there
know.
There are 17 varieties of pizza.
Yes.
All the way up from the plain, up to mushrooms and...
Anchovy.
Anchovy. You can put almost anything on.
Sausage.
What? Sausage, yes.
But look, these things you've been associated with...
people like pizza.
For Christmas, it isn't... It's like fish for Thanksgiving. It isn't a practical thing to...
Well, it can be served piping hot, and you can have as many pizzas as you want, depending on how many people you're entertaining at your festive table. And you can drink almost anything with pizza, water and milk and coffee or anything else.
Any of your other beverages. Well, I don't know. We're happy to...
But it is festive. It's holiday. You can color a pizza so that it has more festive meaning than a brown turkey. Put it that
way,
Buster.
All right, but whoever ate a green pizza, I mean, couldn't want to do that either.
You could, of course.
Yes.
But there are many wonderful, harmless food dyes on the market now.
Well, it wouldn't be too appetizing, I don't think, Captain. I wish you could direct your energies to something a little more,
Well, all I'd like to say is just let the idea out, let the people think about it for a while, we'll see how it goes over.
Swell.
Think of pizza for Christmas, will you, friends?
Captain Parker Gibbs from Gloucester, Massachusetts, and now back inside.
Now, instead of a traffic report and stock market thing and all that, we bring you another episode of One Fellow's Family. Today's episode, entitled Garage Double, or rather Garage Trouble, is taken from Book V, Chapter II, page 235. As we look in on the family now, we find that Mother...
Well, Sandy, I finally got the rose bushes trimmed.
Well...
Just in time, too. It looks like snow.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Say, we didn't have one rose this summer, didn't we?
Well, that's what comes of trimming them too close, like I did last year.
Well, why don't you let them be?
Yeah.
They're so small now, you've pruned them almost even with the earth.
I thought I might call up the rose hybridizer and find out just whether I'm doing it right or wrong, Sandy.
I forget what kind of roses those are out there.
Well, they're some kind of...
But didn't we have the Reza Stevens rose there one year?
Well, all I can remember is the Bob Perkins rose.
That was a beauty.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll get any message from Jack today.
I don't know, but didn't we have a wonderful holiday, though?
Yes, it was a very delightful.
I think of it, and the weekend following was so exciting.
All of the children were here, Hanky and Panky.
Yeah.
Pinky and Blinky.
And Blinky.
And Blinky, the twins. I used to have the whole family together for Thanksgiving.
Well, it certainly will be quiet this week. You got a cold coming up.
Smoke of some kind, Fanny. You smoking, Fanny?
I haven't smoked for a long time.
Yeah. Well,
this will be a quiet weekend compared to last.
It could be, Fanny, yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to put my rose trimmers away.
Well, all right. Well,
where's the door to the cellar, Fanny?
It's right over there by the back entryway.
I think maybe I'll go out and check the garage for trouble.
I think... There is all this smoke coming from.
It's coming from the garage, Fanny.
Somebody left the radio on with all that fool noise. I'll go turn off the radio.
Yeah.
And you go see if there's any garage trouble.
You've been listening to One Fellow's Family. Brought to you instead of a traffic report and a stock market roundup. Stuff like that.
Studio full of spook.
Today's episode entitled At the Seashore, or rather, Garage Trouble. Which was the episode?
Garage Trouble, announcer.
Garage Trouble, taken from one of the books that T. Wilson Messy has. I can't read my notes. It's too smoky in here. The Messy production.
And once again, hello, ladies. This is your True to Life announcer, Danny.
All right, Danny.
Danny's True to Life Kitchen. What, Anthony?
Danny, I want you to cut it short because the last time you talked so much, I couldn't finish my story.
Well, I'd just like a handful of these cookies, Anthony.
Well, take them, Danny, and dry up.
Now, what's our True to Life story about today?
Today's story about Ms. and Mrs. Lawrence Hedges.
And Penny, do you mind if I raise the shade? It's a little...
Oh, Danny, now don't get going on that shade again. I do want to tell the story about Mr. and Mrs. Lawrence Hedges.
All right.
Well, Larry, he was called. He worked for the railroad. And he decided one day that he and the missus would go east. And rather than take the railroad, they thought they'd drive off in their new automobile. This is many years ago, and they had a whippet. And they get in the whippet.
Did that make it go better, Aunt Penny?
Well, now, Danny, we won't have time for those puns. Now, let me get along with the story. Well, Mr. and Mrs. Lawrence Hedges departed from their home in Mason City, heading east in their whippet. Right outside of town was the great coursing river known as the Big Stream. And as they started to cross over the stream...
Say, Mrs. Lawrence Hedges, does this bridge look safe to you?
Yes, it does, Mr. Hedges.
doesn't to me. It's kind of waving in the breeze, kind of like, thanks. Mrs. Hedges.
Don't seem to be waving any more than any other bridge would wave in the breeze.
No, but see how the cables...
Keep your eye on the road rather than looking at the cables. If you don't mind, we do want to get east, don't we, to Metropole to visit our neighbors?
I know one thing, though, Miss Lawrence Hedges. I wish we were on the other side of this bridge instead of right in the middle of it. I'd feel a lot safer on dry land than I do here in this automobile driving over this shaky bridge.
Well, do whatever you want to do, Hedges. I don't care. I'll just sit here.
Well, we've come so far, we might as well proceed to the other side, Miss Hedges.
Well, Danny, Mr.
Great
Hedges,
Scott,
he managed to save himself.
Sounded like the bridge gave away. What happened?
Last he saw was Ms. Hedges on the top of the Whippet going downstream faster than they were going when they were driving it on dry land.
Well, that certainly
he
was.
He could swim. Fortunately, he saved himself. And that's about it.
Well, that was a wonderful true-to-life story, Aunt Penny, and I know that all the ladies will be anxious to hear your next one.
Yes, and if Mrs. Hedges is listening, won't you write and tell me how you were saved?
And that's about it, ladies. Time's up, Aunt Penny, and until next time, she says...
If anyone knows how that dear lady ever made out from all that trouble floating down the river and all, I wish they'd let me know.
And this is Danny saying so long, ladies, until next time.
Oh, dry up. What a windbag. Honestly.
And now, Fink Bicycle Clips, to keep your trousers from being caught in the bicycle chain as you pedal, presents another episode of Matt Neffer, Boy Spotwelder.
Matt, with his friend Todd, today is seated in Matt's apartment. The shades of evening draw nigh as we hear...
Look here, Todd, this letter in the morning mail from Arizona.
I'm in the den, Matt.
Oh. Come out here a second.
You said something about a letter?
I'm in the den now, Todd. I'm sorry.
Funny, I didn't pass you on the way in.
I went around the other way.
What letter are you speaking about, Matt?
Letter here that came in the morning mail from
this
Arizona.
Letter written on paper with an envelope postmarked Arizona.
Mm-hmm. I haven't opened it yet because I wanted you to be here when I did.
Well, what is it? I mean, what? Inside the...
Out here in the kitchen, Todd.
Oh, yes.
Bring the letter out here. We'll steam it open. Maybe this is something for the FBI.
But why steam it open, Matt, when you don't know what's inside?
Well,
I mean, if you knew what was inside, there would be some...
I'm not sure that this letter was meant for me.
But it's addressed to you.
No,
I mean, your name.
The name.
Why, it says Matthew Neffer.
No. But now, hold it up to the light, and what does it say?
Dear sir.
Well, is that me?
There's nothing strange about that, Matt. You're reading the letter inside the envelope. By holding it up to the light, you can read the words on the paper inside. But the letter is addressed to you.
Out here. Out here in the back porch, Scott.
All right.
What were you saying?
I was saying that you were reading the letter inside the envelope.
Oh, well, then I'll just tear it open and read it.
That would seem to me to be the easiest way. Your hands are shaking, Matt.
I'm nervous, Todd.
I wonder who it's from. Do you know anybody in Arizona?
No, but there's a chance that I knew somebody and then they moved to Arizona. There, now, let's see what it says. Well.
And so our story becomes more interesting with each passing day. Here is a letter. A letter from whom Matt does not know. A letter from someone in Arizona which begins, Dear Sir. What does it mean and what part will it play? Be sure to listen next time when we'll hear Matt say,
There's plenty of paper in here, Todd.
In the next episode of Matt Neffer, Boy Spot Welding King of the World.
Audience, can you guess that tune?
All right, if you can, stop that tune. We're here to play a big game with you today. We're going to play music, and if you know it, you'll push a buzzer.
Okay, here's our first contestant to run both
length of the studio, up and then back. Are you ready, ma'am?
Yes, I'm ready to go.
Put your sneakers on there.
You betcha.
Okay.
All righty.
When you hear the bell ring, go.
All right.
And here we go.
And I'm off.
She's off. Be careful now. What a wonderful lady guest. Ring the bell. Don't forget to ring. Now back. Hurry. Ring the bell. There you are. All right. What was the name of that song?
What
was the name of the song?
That's
the whole object of the game, man. You don't just run back.
But
and
I
forth.
Thought I'd just if I ran up and
no,
back
no, no,
and hit the bell within a certain length of time.
No, you have to do that.
Well, I couldn't listen to the music and run too.
All right, do you want to try again, or are you pooped?
I'm awfully pooped, but well, I'll try it again.
All right, here we go. When you hear the bell sound, start out and listen to the music this time. Here we go. Okay, pay attention now. Don't forget the tune this time. That's the big thing. I'll back. I'll ring the bell and come back. Come on. Okay. Well, now you look as if you know the answer.
T for two.
T for two is right, and you win the chance now to go on to our next big money.
Clayton Bud.
What?
I'm sorry, but I think the song is wrong. We're checking with the judges now.
Well, I'm sure that was T for two.
A baby orchid flown in from Hawaii for her. Good luck.
Oh, they're telling me it wasn't T for two. I'm sorry, ma'am. It was my mistake. I was sure it was.
What do I get?
A baby orchid flown in from Hawaii.
A baby orchid flown in from Hawaii.
That's right.
After I run up and down the length of this stage and make a fool out of myself.
That's right. That's your prize, and thank you very much for being with us here today and trying to discover what the tune is.
My word. Where do I go now?
Right over there. And be sure you join us next week to play What the Tune Is on this program.
Your sanitation department in action.
My name is Reginald Dattle Poop Jr. My job, keep the city clean. Keep the city streets clean. Each day, my partner and I pick up garbage and trash that people throw out. One morning last summer, we were rolling down 2nd Avenue in a great big truck. And...
Hey.
Yes, Sam.
Well, Fred,
it's kind of gamey.
Well, it's a warm day. Got your lunch with you?
Yeah. I got it in the glove compartment. Gee, I hate to pick up stuff from a fish market on a day like this.
Boy, this traffic is miserable, isn't it?
I hate this traffic. We'll be eating fish on a day like that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the fish markets go on and on.
Yeah, it's the hum of a big city. The activity that has to go on to keep the city moving.
Sure like to get back on Grand Central again. Just stabbing papers.
That was a good run, Fred.
Boy.
Remember, I used to get home by 4:30, play with the kids, take a quick dip. Now it's 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock.
The lights used to be staggered along here, didn't they?
Yeah, it seems like. Well,
there's a red light here, we gotta stop.
It's a stop anyway. Who's got
any garbage today?
Just trying to heave the barrel, Fred.
Any garbage, sir?
No, you didn't have any garbage. Thing looks empty. Let's
Lights
roll.
Turn green. Let's go.
Roll.
He must have about half a load by now.
You can't go back with half a load, bud.
No, the chief would really blow us out.
Here's a trash can. Let's pull up here.
Whose turn is it to hurl a barrel?
I'll jump down. Hey, do you need an umbrella?
What do you mean? It's not raining.
No, but it's a pretty good umbrella. It's
okay.
Got one hole in it.
I'll take it.
Sure.
Throw it up here in the treasure box.
You wear 11 and a half shoe, don't you?
No, 9 and a half.
Nine and a half? Any of the kids wear these?
Yeah, my oldest kid does.
Yeah, they're curled up. They've been wet. But they dry out, they'll be okay.
I'll take them.
Sure. Here.
And what's that over there? That looks pretty good.
Tie.
Oh.
But it's the old-fashioned kind, the wide kind.
Yeah. No need to wear the wide ones anymore.
No. The heck with it.
One thing I like is narrow ties. Narrow ties and horizontal stripes. That's for me. Don't find those in the rubbish cans anymore.
Hey, here's a wicker basket.
It's got a hole in it, too. In fact, it's got no bottom at all, Fred.
Probably grow flowers or something in it.
Yeah, I'm making a nice plant.
Yeah, take it.
Put it in.
Well, let's roll.
And so once again, your sanitation department men, in action, have presented another little-known side of their lives. Be sure and listen to the next episode when we'll hear Fred say...
Are you hungry?
On your sanitation department, in action.
Where is the gentleman who was picked just before we went on the air by our assistant Wilbur Connolly, young squirt who works for us?
I do.
Why were you selected, sir? Would you tell us?
Because I know the standings of all the minor league baseball teams as of this date.
Do you want to rattle them off before we...
Texas League, Dallas, Houston, Fort Worth, San Antonio, Tulsa, Shreveport, Austin, and Oklahoma City.
Well, that's as of today, Tuesday.
Southern Association, Atlanta, Birmingham, Memphis, Mobile, New Orleans, Nashville, Chattanooga, Montgomery, in that order.
Boy, you really have a wealth of baseball information.
I don't know the American League, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, why do you concentrate more on this than on the... American
National League. It's just a quirk in my nature.
Mm-hmm. Where's your home, Ed?
Here in New York.
What is your name?
Ed.
Mm-hmm. And you've made it a practice to study up on statistics, have you?
No, it's just that I just like to rattle off the standings of the minor leagues, that's all. I do it at the slightest provocation.
Well, like, where would you have an opportunity? Does anybody ever ask you?
Subway stations, church.
You find it pretty easy to get a seat on a bus if you start rattling these off?
Yes, I can clear the bus pretty quick. I get on the bus and stand up there where you put the coin. I say, Indianapolis, Denver, Omaha, Minneapolis, and they all think they're on our South Country bus. They all jump off and
sure,
I have
the bus to yourself.
Sure.
I suppose the driver would get a little bit upset at that,
well,
too.
Well, I've even known drivers to get off. Mm-hmm. But, of course, they went for a cop.
Yeah, but this way, have you accumulated quite a few buses?
No, I wouldn't want to become involved in anything like that. That would be
a little
shady.
Shady, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you enjoy yourself today?
Yes, very much.
Good. Well, what do you think of...
Schenectady, Binghamton, Reading, Allentown, Albany, Syracuse, Williamsport, and Johnstown, in that order, Eastern League.
I'm going to step outside.
Where are you going?
Well, you cleared the studio as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I don't know what to say. I'm here all alone, except for that fellow over there.
And once again, with his very appropriate theme, recorded by his wife, here from the Lackawanna Field Station is Bob and Ray Agriculture Director Dean Archer Armstead. Dean, who have you brought along with you today?
I have brought along with me a gentleman here I'd like you to meet.
Yes,
sir.
This
is Mr. Benjamin Flaway.
How do you do, Mr. Flaway?
And
for yourself, without burning it,
the
gizzard operates pretty quiet.
Oh, just a moment, Benjamin.
Would you stop that, please?
I'm afraid we're a little ahead of ourselves.
I understand that today your subject is poultry, is that right?
And particularly chicken gizzards.
Chicken gizzards. And you're going to answer foul questions sent in to you from our listeners, are you?
That's right. I've had, over a period of several months now, almost 20 foul questions submitted. And I thought today would be a good day to answer them.
Well, all right. Now, what is Mr. Farloway going to have to do with this?
His name is Farloway.
Farloway. What will he do?
He has a demonstration here of chicken gizzards with and well, maybe Benjamin could best explain it himself.
All right, put the microphone on over there.
But with any gizzard, the function is the same.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
To crush feed into fine particles for assimilation into eggs and meat.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
By itself, without granite grit, the gizzard operates pretty quietly.
That's right.
Listen.
Does he always talk this slowly or...
Yeah. He's just falling around.
Hear that swishing sound?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's a gizzard.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a gizzard that isn't working properly.
Is the actual sound of a chicken gizzard crushing mash, but with no granite grit present to help break down the mash particles for more complete digestion and assimilation.
Oh.
Now listen to a chicken gizzard grinding a ration of grain with hard granite grit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Keeps the stuffing out of it.
Oh, yes.
On this demonstration, he had an awful lot of mic hum.
Yes, it gets the point across, I think.
All right, Benjamin, I want to thank you very much for coming by. There's the sound of a gifted... It's really mashing up the feed.
Thank you very much, Dean, and our thanks, too, to Benjamin Furnishwith for bringing in the chicken gizzard record. I know it's added a great deal to your agriculture talk today. And so until next time, for our next visit with Dean Archer Armstead, it's so long.
And now, chocolate cookies with white stuff in between them brings you another episode of Lawrence Fechtenberg, Interstellar Officer Candidate.
5, 3, 2, 4.
at the Interstellar Officer Candidate Space Academy. And time for the passing out ceremony. In the hall outside the assembly room.
Well, Mellish, I'm surprised to see that you're graduating this year.
I brought my marks up at the last minute, Peckinberger.
Congratulations, Mellish. I didn't think that you'd be with us. I didn't think you'd get your bars today.
I didn't. Berger? Well, let's go on inside. It must be time for the ceremony.
I suppose you feel honored to be walking with me, the valedictorian of the class, eh?
Honored, Peckinberger?
You're not, eh?
You'll see.
Well, Mellish, when you become a lieutenant, I hope you won't continue to sneer.
I'm sneering right now, Peckinberger, and I intend to keep it up.
That attitude will get you nowhere.
Well, it's gotten me through the Interstellar Space Academy, Peckinberger.
Once you're an officer in the Interstellar Army, you cannot sneer.
Well, here's my seat. Right next to Jet Ordway.
My seat is way down front.
Hello, Jet.
Hello, Mark. I'm surprised to see that you're graduating.
Yes, I was telling Peckinberger I had pulled my marks up at the last moment.
A real lunkhead like you, I don't think should be commissioned.
You still have a neat sense of humor, Jet.
I mean that, and you know it, Mellish.
Hey, wait, I think the valedictorian speech is about to begin.
My name is Lawrence Peckinberger. I'm your class valedictorian. I have a few words that I'd like to pass along to my fellow graduates today.
Doesn't it seem funny that there's only three of us graduates?
As you know, we now go out into the world.
You?
Into a larger world than man has ever known before.
Peckinberger.
Where people at one time were limited to highways and oceans and brief flights in the air.
Look at the dean.
We now fly from planet to planet.
Oh, my.
The whole world has become... Well, just like a small town.
Hey, Jack, come on, let's get out of here.
Yeah, this really is a
dog. Oh, it's dumb.
And so Jet, Mug Mellish, leave Lawrence Peckinberger as he addresses the junior members of the Space Academy. Sure, and join us next time when we'll hear Lawrence say...
And here, in the final five pages of my speech, which I have written here, as you notice, single space, I think I can sum up...
In the next exciting episode of Lawrence Peckinberger, Interstellar Officer Candidate.